And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from New York City, New York, where the Toronto Raptors are ahead 1-0 in the NBA Finals. The Toronto Raptors, the team named because Jurassic Park was a popular movie in 1994 and they had purple jerseys with dinosaurs on them, are three wins away from the NBA championship.
Yeah.
Richard Jefferson, the last time we were on this podcast, you took me to task for declaring Pascal Siakam the most improved player in the NBA.
Yes.
Are you, sir, fresh off a 14 of 17 performance, are you ready to apologize to me for this incorrect argument, or are you sticking by it? What did D'Angelo Russell do in the playoffs this year?
I'll say this, right? It's very different. I never argued that Pascal Siakam wasn't a person that deserved the award.
Don't ruin this for me by going back and getting out the evidence.
Okay, look, Pascal Siakam.
In my head, you said Pascal Siakam should be in the G League.
That's what you said.
That's what it felt like to me.
No, I like Pascal Siakam. I like his work ethic. I like what he's brought to the table. I love all of that, right? That team that he is on is outstanding, and he has definitely risen to the top of their importance level. Right? We can talk about Kawhi. But now when Pascal Siakam can go and win an NBA Finals game when Kawhi has a average night, we won't say off night, just an average night, I think that just shows that he's done everything needed to be in this position.
He was outstanding. He hit some shots that he's not going to hit again. I think he had two step-back jumpers over Draymond Green.
He smacked the ball in the offensive rebound. He hit a hook shot, bank shot straight on.
Who had the uglier hook shot, Pascal Siakam or Jonas Jerebko? I can't watch another Jonas Jerebko. Is it Jonas or Jonas, first of all?
Well, I think both J's are silent. It's Onis or Repko, right? I think he's Spanish. I think that's something that people don't know.
It's funny. I know that it's Jonas Valanciunas. For some reason, I'm getting hung up on the Jonas thing. If I see him take another, but his running hook is like a shot I would take.
Where is Jerebko from?
Sweden, I think, right?
Is he Swedish? He's not from Seattle. Because then that might change the pronunciation of his name. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
We are real time. Jerebko is from Sweden.
Okay.
A city called Kina, which I am probably mispronouncing. Kina.
So is it Jonas?
I don't know, but I don't want to see him take another running hook. Pascal made some shots that are going to be unsustainable. He got some runouts where, as Steve Kerr said, we don't need to belabor it. Steve Kerr said it. Our transition defense was terrible. They didn't match up well. They let guys, even when they were after makes or after misses, when they had all five guys back, like it should not have been a problem. It became a problem. What about his performance felt sustainable to you going into game two?
I think his aggression going downhill was very, very good. I think their ball movement and his pace, he took a lot of good shots. Right. Of the 14 that he made, I want to say about 9 of them he could probably make fairly consistently. Right. So let's say if it wasn't great for him, let's say he was 9. He made 9 of those field goals.
9 of 17.
9 of 17, which is right where I think a normal night is for him because he is that good and that consistent. But I want to give all the credit to the Toronto Raptors. Now, if I have to see what I want to see differently, just play some damn defense, Golden State.
We're going to disagree a little.
Yeah, tell me why you want to disagree with me saying that I want to see the Warriors play defense when admittedly their transition was awful. Toronto shot 50% from the field, 40% from 3. And obviously, you know, 84% from the free throw line. Show me where their defense wasn't abysmal.
Well, clearly they can play better free throw defense. Allowing 84% foul shooting, inexcusable. Did you have a free throw defense technique? Did you ever try to like clap when someone was like?
No, but you know what I did? Can you cuss on these podcasts?
Yes, you can.
I foul a lot harder, right? I don't want to see Siakam only shoot 2 free throws and make 14 field goals. Do you know what? If you put somebody on their butt and they're kind of like limping around or they're kind of shaking out their hand, right, because they just got smacked really, really hard, that's not free throw defense, but it's when they say make a person feel something, when they make like show a little resistance, if you get hit on a free throw and you get knocked on your butt or knocked into the backstop in a very legal way, like going up to make a free throw when you're kind of like, oh, that one stung a little bit, that's quote unquote free throw defense. Like you're going to go earn this, not just me just a ticky tack. But they didn't even foul this individual.
What's the hardest foul you ever delivered? Who is it against?
Hardest foul? I don't know.
Did you ever feel bad about a foul? Did you ever feel bad where like, ooh, I didn't hit him where I thought I was gonna hit. That ended up bad.
No. When you talk about bad fouls, you're talking about like the potential for injury.
Undercutting guys.
Like, no, that was, as a guy that lived or tried to stay in the air most of my career, I never wanted to undercut anybody. But I will say, just crossing somebody and just hitting like you're taking your forearm over both arms. I'm not talking about a dirty play. I'm just saying if a guy has 17 shots and makes 14 field goals and he only shot 2 free throws, please don't tell me that you are playing the type of defense that you need to play against this individual.
Well, and he did a lot of that against Draymond Green, who proclaimed himself the best defender in the history of the NBA about 2 weeks ago. And his foul trouble, I think, changed his aggression level.
Agreed.
So here would be my argument. The transit, we're in complete agreement on transition defense. Terrible, terrible. And that's, let's say 16 points happened just because of that.
Mind you, your argument is that the Warriors defense wasn't that bad, but continue.
Oh, okay. Fair point. Okay. Touche. Okay. My argument would be they're half. So we spent a lot of time on the show talking about, this idea that did they help too much on Kawhi Leonard and let the other guys go off, or do they need to let Kawhi get his, or do they need to help even more? My point was that I thought their half-court defense was actually okay. I thought their half-court defense was good enough. Transition defense, awful. Siakam made some crazy – even his threes. I believe both of them were above the break threes, which mm-hmm. you're going to – like he's – if he makes them, he makes them. It's yeah. like you're not going to run him off those shots. I thought their half-court defense was actually not – there were a couple of rotations they didn't make to like Marc Gasol above the break, but like it's – we're 2 weeks away from – the Bucks not guarding Marc Gasol. Like, this is not a new. They defended Kawhi pretty well. Danny Green even made some contested threes. That one with Clay, like in his jersey.
That's normally a Splash Brother shot.
I don't think their half court defense was that bad.
I agree. Right. There were some things in the half court that. But let's be honest. This is the NBA Finals. This is a team that in this 5-year stretch under Steve Kerr has been one of the top defensive teams. And there were years where they were one of the best defensive teams, you know, maybe in, I don't want to say history, but their offense and their defense, when you're number one or number two in both categories, that's the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Right? That is the Golden State Warriors. They're outscoring everyone. They're shutting them down on defense. They're doing all of these things. If we're going to say that the Warriors defense wasn't that bad, that's fine. But this is the damn NBA Finals. And you're shorthanded, and you're gonna, and we're gonna look at effort, like transition defense. They didn't play the type of defense that you expect from a shorthanded champion.
Well, and they played, the transition stuff was dumb, which is not like them. It's like, Clay wants to be guarding Kyle Lowry, so he just lets Pascal Siakam run. Like, they put Siakam on Clay for part of the second half, and so there's a cross match there, and Clay just gets a little picky about it, and like, dude, you can't just let a guy run.
No.
Or 3 guys run to Kawhi in like a kind of a static situation. Like Siakam's like, oh, nobody's on me. I'm just going to keep dribbling.
Yeah. And this was your example is perfect. This is one of the strengths of the Warriors because they have all these cross matches of trying to grab Steph and who's going to guard Klay, and Draymond gets the ball out. And now you're just in a position where you're, oh, just go to the nearest man. Right. So that's been a strength. So that confusion that happens in transition is where the Warriors will oftentimes kill people because people are cross matched trying to get to Steph or trying to get to Klay. And then all of a sudden you had Livingston get the dunk or Andre Iguodala gets a layup because people are spraying out to their shooters. So a strength for the Warriors, it was a weakness for them, like trying to match up to different guys and allowing other guys to get open shots or layups. They didn't look sharp. Right. When we're talking about finals defense, that means that you need to be playing the best defense all year long. And that looked like an average defensive performance by them.
I thought back to Siakam. I thought this was a good Nick Nurse game. I thought it was a well coached. I thought the Raptors were prepared to do some interesting things like the following. I thought on offense, they had Siakam moving all around the floor, and he spent a lot of time in the dunker spot. So, like, they knew, the Raptors knew, Golden State is going to blitz Kawhi on the pick and roll, which they did a lot. And so Marc Gasol is going to slip into open space, and he's going to get that ball, and he's going to have that moment where it's a 4-on-3, and he's going to have to make plays. And they set up the situation. It almost reminded me what Houston does with Harden, where they would have Pascal in the dunker spot instead of in the corner, and one shooter on his side of the floor. So that becomes a very tricky situation that you all of a sudden your help gets complicated. There's not two shooters sitting there that you can set up in between, and your help
is either the dunker or the shooter.
Yeah, and you're kind of screwed either way. And like they would post Kawhi and Pascal would cut down from the 3-point arc into the dunker, and you could see the Warriors were not ready for that. Their help got confused. They left the wrong shooters open, and so it's easy to say, okay, so now the Warriors know that they're going to adjust and be ready for it, but like. The Raptors know that the Warriors know that, and they're going to have – I think there's a good cat and mouse game there.
Yeah, but this is the same thing that we've talked about with the Draymond and Steph, right? So they blitz Steph in a pick and roll. You throw it to Draymond, and now in Marc Gasol, he's making a decision, right? Do you stay to Clay? Do you have Iggy or Livingston in the dunker, right? Because those guys aren't going to space out to three. So they almost took a page out of the Golden State book. And even with all
– that's a good point.
Yeah, even with all of that – it's a very, very difficult way to guard. That's why the Golden State Warriors were the first ones to kind of do it. And I love what Marc Gasol did. I love the way he played. But I still stand by it. It's you need to be more aggressive. The lack of free throws for Siakam is something that I find very, very upsetting. And again, you can go into depth. You can't just take a hard foul on somebody when you're shorthanded already. If Draymond is on the bench with foul trouble or Clay or any of these guys. So that's again, it enforces you to be a lot more conservative with your fouls, a lot more conservative with your aggression. And it showed.
Yeah. You know, everyone is sitting there bemoaning that they have these lineups where Steph is the only good shooter on the floor and Clay is the only good shooter in football. That's been the case the whole playoff. Since Durant got hurt.
Yeah, and
don't have shooting.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the number one and number two shooter. Well, the number one shooter of all time and another guy that it could be either two or everyone has universally top five shooters of all time. So don't say you don't have enough shooting. Steph makes up for two different shooters.
Yeah, Steph is like three shooters.
Yeah, he's like two shooters. Clay is like two shooters, right? Because their movement, their transition, their ways to knock down shots in every way that's ever been created, right? You only need two of those guys.
Well, so that was my other thing I was going to say about Nick Nurse. So everyone knows the Warriors have all these non-shooters on the floor. That's been the case the whole playoffs, particularly since Durant got hurt. Everyone knows you're not going to guard them. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows how the Warriors are going to respond to you not guarding him. You don't guard Draymond, he's going to hand off and Clay or Steph is going to shoot. I actually thought the Raptors, when they put Kawhi on Draymond, which they did more in the second half, I thought the whole point of that was going to be they're going to switch. They're going to switch. They actually switched much less than I thought they were going to all throughout the game. Even the off-ball stuff with Clay and Steph running around, Steph and Clay got some threes or they probably should have switched and they didn't. And even, again, when Kawhi was on Draymond and they would run Steph, Draymond pick and roll, they didn't switch even toward the end of the game. I think that might have surprised the Warriors a little bit. It surprised me. And again, it's easy to say now they have the switch card in their back pocket. Are the Warriors going to be prepared for them? I just think Nick Nurse was a little ahead of the curve last night.
Well, he's ahead of the curve. And that's one of the things that we like about Nick Nurse is that even his game-to-game adjustments in the last series against Milwaukee, right? They just kept getting better. And you're going to win a championship. Your in-game adjustments and your game-to-game or series-to-series adjustments have to be on point. But let me say this about the Warriors. This is the best team that they have played, right? This is the best team that the Toronto Raptors is the best team that they have played.
Yeah.
Their defense is far better than Houston. Their defense is far better than Portland. And it's not a knock on those two teams, but the Toronto Raptors would have beat Portland pretty handily. They would have beat Houston, in my opinion, right? So you look at that and now the Golden State Warriors are going against a healthy, completely healthy. I know they got a newbie that should be coming, right?
But might play game two.
Exactly. So they have a full roster and you have you're missing if Andre Iguodala is, you've had a lot of roster issues and a lot of health issues, and you're going against the best team that you've played all year long that is fully healthy. You can say Kawhi's a little hobbled, but give me a hobbled Kawhi versus, you know, where the leading scorer for the Golden State Warriors is, and that's sitting on the sideline.
Yeah, and you know, the injury issues you're talking about, they did a great job of helping off those guys who are bad shooters, but somehow not giving up the stuff that most teams give up when they do that, recovering at the right time. They were just the Raptors were super in sync on defense, living in that in-between world where you're helping, but you're not just abandoning guys and you're snapping back into not helping at the right time. And you know, I just don't know. Like, they just are a really good defensive team.
Great,
like,
defensive team.
Clearly they're mentally connected and the chemistry is there and they scheme. They know what to do. Like, I don't think the Warriors can just count on them playing a worse defensive game. I don't think that they can expect that. This is a really good defensive team with good personnel, smart personnel, make the right reads, connected.
Oh, Zach, we're 100% in agreement. We can't count on them to play a worse defensive game, right? So let's say that. So if we're looking at this game from a, okay, which side can improve their offense, their defense, or this? I don't know how much more the Toronto Raptors can improve their offense. You could say, yes, Kawhi can get going. But even if Kawhi gets going, that means that there's other shots, that there's less shots for other guys. And if you get 20 points from Marc Gasol, if you get 32 or 34?
Pascal?
Yeah, from Pascal.
It was a lot.
It was, if you 32. Get 32.
32,
if you're
32 getting, 8 and 5, by the way. 32, yeah. 8, 5 is steal and two blocks.
Yeah, like if you're getting that type of activity from those guys, you're going to say offensively, I don't know how much better the Toronto Raptors can play. Right? Then their defense is always going to be consistent because that's who they are. Now the Warriors, where can they improve? I think offensively they were fine. 28 assists on 34 field goals. That's who they are. That's impressive. Let's talk about that. But then the flip side of it is, like, their defense can improve quite a bit, right? We can talk about transition. The half court, you're like, okay, it wasn't that bad in the half court, but there was a lot of shots hit by guys in Toronto, for Toronto, that just made their half court percentage probably go up. The Van Fleet shot, some of the shots by Pascal.
At the same time, though, the Warriors' offense, half court, they did nothing. They couldn't do anything. I think it was like 80 something points per 100 possessions, which is nothing. And they got like and that's first shot defense too, but they were hanging around because they got a bunch of like random points, like offensive rebound that hits the front of the rim and almost decapitates a couple players and then bounces to Curry. He hits a three. They got a bunch of those like kind of random points. And then Steph got to the foul line
a lot.
I think most,
14 times.
Yeah. I think mostly good calls, but also calls that like, he's kind of flailing his limbs around a little bit and getting calls in the mid range where, you know, if you're going to foul him, that's an okay place to foul him. It's only two free throws, not three. Like, I didn't watch the Warriors offense and think they have any rhythm of any kind here.
I'll say this, and everyone, the game one to me is not that big of a deal, right? Game one is not that big of a deal. And it is a big deal because you're going to talk about percentages and who wins. Yes. But game two lets me know what the series is going to be. Right. The game two, if Toronto comes out and punches Golden State in the mouth and wins by 18, all of a sudden everybody's going to be like, what on earth? Because now you put so much pressure on Golden State to go back home and win two, and they're probably not in the best mode. They're banged up. They're a champion. So you never want to count them out. But let's look at some of these daggers that were hit. Right? 30 seconds ago in the first quarter, you had Danny Green hit that three that was ridiculous. McCall hits that three late.
By the way, McCall held his follow through after that.
Yeah.
Hold it all day.
This is your one moment. You haven't been played. You have really, you know.
High five Drake. Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want. Live in that moment. Cause that was a big three. Right when you feel like, okay, maybe this is the moment where the Warriors can kind of, all of a sudden McCall hits a big three. Then you have Van Fleet hit a big three that kind of kept the distance, right? Okay. It's a 3 minute game, or 3 minutes to go. Big shot. Kyle Lowry, 1 for 7. It was a big shot because it was the three that he hit late in the game. The game was pretty much already over. But you know what? For a confidence builder, for a crowd, you know, just like a cherry on top. And hey, look who else is going to finally hit a shot. Kyle Lowry with a three. So it was just, there were so many shots hit by their role players at the right time in the right. They weren't daggers, but they kept that distance, and that's where the Warriors will get you.
And it's easy. Like Kyle will obviously score more than 7 points. Probably
it's just game one. We know that Kyle probably shouldn't ever show up for any game ever that starts with game one.
It makes me sad that we can't make fun of the Raptors losing every game one anymore. That was a fun little tradition we had going on.
Now. Yeah, and the one game that they win is what? Against the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals.
Well, they won the Philly game one too. That was the really one that ended because they lost even to Orlando in game one.
And then they lost to Milwaukee game one. Yeah, so it's still there.
I think when you win it in the finals, we can't make fun of it anymore.
That's not true. We'll find a way. I'll find a way to make fun of it.
I thought Kyle played a good 7-point game. Like he pushed the pace early. He was aggressive driving. I got into people's bodies and then would hit trailers and stuff. So here's a question I wanted to ask you actually, because this speaks directly to your experience playing the Warriors. I wrote this in my preview that when you guys beat the Warriors, mm-hmm. one of the things you did in defiance of conventional wisdom at the time was, when you saw opportunities to run, you ran.
Yeah.
And people said, you can't run against the Warriors. That's death. You can't play an up and down game against them. And I wrote in my preview that Kawhi reminded me a little bit of LeBron in this way. And the Raptors remind me a little bit of that team in this way. This is a really good fast breaking team. Lowry is one of the best hit ahead passers in the league. Siakam is just a demon in transition. They're one of the best transition offense. Like they have to run.
Yeah.
They have to run. And Kawhi is like, okay, when those opportunities don't present themselves, Kawhi, much like LeBron, is sort of like, all right, so when we can run, we're going to run. But otherwise, I can kind of grind this game down.
Yeah.
And when it calls for it, sort of take the pace out of the game when it's convenient for us.
And who does that for the Warriors? Kevin Durant.
KD.
Okay.
So my question for you was, in that finals, like, did Ty Lue discuss with you guys, okay, so no one thinks we should run with this team? We're going to run. Here's how we're going to do it. And were you guys like, wait, we're going to try to fast break the Warriors? What was the discussion about that?
No, so it wasn't that. And this is what's very, very key. It's not fast break. It's pace, right? If you don't want to change because you're afraid of what they do, right? That's not, you just want to be more calculated with your pace. And so what that means is that we have, like, in Cleveland, we had great shooters. Kyrie's amazing in transition. LeBron is a freight train in transition. You had 3-point shooters like J.R. Smith. Like you want to get him open transition shots. So we can't shy away from those opportunities just because they were the best. And I'll go back to years before when I was with the New Jersey Nets and we were just a transition team, right? Teams didn't want to run with us. They wanted to keep us in the half court and you had to have like your half court offense. But teams that were really good, they wanted to run with us. They wanted to in opportunities because this is what they say. You don't want to hook a hooker in boxing, right? You don't want to hook a person that's known for the hook. Well, you know what transition teams don't do a very good job of? And that's get back in transition because they're typically waiting to just run. So it's common knowledge in the NBA that you can typically run on teams that are transition teams. What you don't want to do is just try to play their game, right? Like you don't want to do 80% transition and just go back and forth because Golden State is going to win that game. But if your game is 50% transition, maybe you dial it back to 40%. Maybe don't take quick shots when they're on a run. When the Warriors are making a run, that's not the time for you to run in transition and shoot a quick three. But if you're up by 10 and you have an opportunity to push, and you can get a quick shot because that's the shot that you've done all year. That's what you want to do.
I thought they struck a very nice. I thought they were going to have to strike a balance to win this series. Mm-hmm. They were going to have to run. You can't be afraid to run against them when you're a good running team. And I thought they struck the right balance. Going forward, the biggest question to me is, okay, how is Golden State going to loosen up its half court offense? How are they going to get better looks? And without KD, KD's not going to play game two. We don't know when he's coming back. How are they going to get better looks in the half court? And maybe the biggest story from game one to me is what's going on with Andre Iguodala's leg, because they are just at a point where they cannot afford
anymore,
particularly wing guys, to go out.
They just need him. This is a legitimate statement. They just need him active. As long as he can step on the court, we don't need him 100%, right? In their brains. That's what they're thinking. We just need you to be able to play. right? Because he didn't knock down any shots, and Andre has his moments. Right? The dude has played a lot of minutes and a lot of basketball. Like, yeah, his knees could be towards the end, right? And where it's like he can't play that high level consistent basketball as much. But at least if he's on the court, he's a great decision maker. He's an above average defender. He's got length. He's got a lot of things that he contribute to the game. But if he's not even on the court, now you go next man up, but you're running out of next men. There's an opportunity. Then now you're talking about foul trouble becomes more of an issue, right? All of these things start to start to accumulate for the Golden State Warriors. So,
and if I know I'm supposed to talk about offense, but if Andre, I mean, he's by far their best option on Kawhi until KD comes back. And if he's, you know, it's one thing, as you said, they just need him active. But if he's active and he's not up for that, then you're getting into a situation where Klay has to guard him. And Klay is a tenacious defender, really, really good, underrated strength. I don't think he can hack that over a full game.
No, he's not built, and this is not a – like, Klay is good against guys like a Bron. Like a Giannis, Kawhi. He's good. Like, you don't ever just be like, oh, this is a tough matchup. But he's great against smaller guys, right? Like, smaller, quicker guards. You want him to guard Chris Paul. You want him to guard James Harden. You want him to guard Kyrie Irving. Like, he's going to do a solid job on those guys, at least a respectable job as far as anybody in the NBA. All of these guys can go for 40 or 50. But I think Andre Iguodala has that strength and that size and that athleticism.
And the arms. Like, he gets those arms into passing. He can be guarding a guy like Kawhi and still get his arm in a passing lane in a very annoying way, which is a rare skill.
Yeah, and so, like, that's what you're saying from Andre Iguodala. Like, we need you at the top of the key, kicking it off to different guys, coming off like Klay and Steph, and we need you to defend. I don't really worry about whether or not you have the explosion for a dunk or a three. We just need you active because we don't have many bodies right now.
And I think, again, if that Kawhi only kind of scratched the surface, I think, of what he can do against this team, particularly against the Klay matchup. And they ran a couple of those sets where they would have Van Vliet screen for him in the corner, and they didn't get anything out of that because the screens weren't good, the timing wasn't good. But, like, as soon as that gets a switch, you're done.
Well, and let's not ignore the fact that Kawhi could be laboring.
Could be. Right, like, you're right.
And we won't know. And you wonder if, as this series progresses, does more time allow for more rehab and for Kawhi to get healthier, or does this only add you start to see more? Because we can stand by this. If Pascal Siakam shoots 50% from the field and goes 9 for 17, this is a completely different game, right? Like those 5 field goals, those 10 points, right? That he's getting. It could be 11 if we want to add a 3. That's the difference in the game between a tight game and a game that is pretty much, you know, just outside of that distance of the Warriors being, you know, able to make a run to take it over.
Yeah. And again, one of the differences in game 2 could be, I think Kawhi, again, only scratched the surface of what he can do. I think he missed some passes that were there for him because of how the other Raptors were moving around that confused the Warriors. But back to Andre, I mean, without KD, he's going to have to hit threes. They're going to need 2 Andre Iguodala threes a game to be in this because they just don't have anybody else, and he's going to be wide open. He has not hit a 3 since game 6 in Houston when he went 5 for 8. He's 0 for life since then, and obviously missed the last Portland game. So maybe, you know, we discount that a little bit. I just don't know what other options they have to loosen up the offense. So we could talk about X's and O's and strategies, but, like, they played 0 seconds with Draymond Green at center last night.
Mm-hmm.
No meaningful seconds. No, I don't think any seconds, not even toward the end. I'm still, even without KD, I'm still surprised they haven't tried Curry, Klay, Livingston, Iguodala, Draymond. That's the only good, like, death lineup variant that is there for them.
He doesn't have many. He's running out of options.
And that lineup even has 3 guys who aren't shooters. And I've said this all year, and no one cares because he's a role player, but one of the underplayed stories of the season for the Warriors was the sort of more precipitous than expected decline of Sean Livingston. He just hasn't been the same guy this year. They used to count him. He would hit 3 or 4 mid-range jumpers a game.
With someone in their face.
That just, like, broke your heart because, like, Steph and Draymond would be on the bench. Be like, all right, these are the minutes we got to win. And he would come up with 8 points. He'd be like, man, that just killed us. Yeah. And he just doesn't do anything anymore. I thought he gave good minutes last night, but he's not the same kind of threat. And so if going Draymond at center is not an option, I'm running out of things.
I wish everyone could see you like looking at this paper. Like, where can we go?
You could play Cousins more for offense, but I just don't think that's going to work. He did not look ready to play big minutes last. He's all right. I actually thought like a guy that I thought looked all right in the game, and I wonder if just to loosen up the offense more, we might see more of him is Quinn Cook. I thought Quinn Cook looked all right. They played him with Steph a little bit, but like if you're talking about maybe Quinn Cook, it's like you just don't have a lot of guys anymore.
No, and that's what that was the risk and the gamble that they've done the last couple of years, and it's paid off.
But yeah, look, you do this. It every time.
Yeah, yeah. The Warriors had four guys with nine or more. They only had three guys in double digits. Right. And Draymond was 2 for 9 with 10 points.
It's Draymond and Andre. That's what it comes down to. They cannot get bad offensive games from, and 10 assists. It's hard to say a bad offensive game from Draymond,
but 6 turnovers,
but 6 turnovers and 2 of 9. Like they're just going to need those guys to make some, to do so, like Draymond. I don't know if you can ask him to make threes, although he had some daggers against Portland, but the layups, the end to end rushes, the stuff that was there in other series.
But Zach, this is what me and you, when you said we were going to argue about the damn Warriors defense, right? And it wasn't that bad. That's fine, but not bad's not going to get it done.
Not going to get it
done. It's not going to get it done. Like, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. You know, you guys need to play better transition and, oh, yeah, there's a couple of shots. But look, if the Warriors can put up 109 points, right, their goal is they got to hold people to 105, right? So you can't give up 118. So that's why we're going to keep going back. You keep looking at offensive lineups, trying to figure out who's going to hit shots.
Because I just think in a half court, they're going to, it's a really tough slog against the Raptors.
Agreed. But at some point in time, Steve Kerr is going to do the exact same thing and look and be like, yeah, what can you do as a coach? Hey, listen, guys, we got to play some damn defense. Like we got to play some actual defense. We have to get back to being
and run.
We got to be the number one or number two defensive team like we've always been that has started this run that started back with Mark Jackson, right? So if you're looking at lineups, don't look at lineups, right? Oh, well, who's going to hit shots? Looney's it. That's not it. That's not where it is. It's really on the defensive end. We got to eliminate transition. Right? We have to count on guys not making the same shots as they did before, right? So if you combine that and play a little bit more resistance, 50-40, you can't give up 50% from the field and 40% from three. Not shorthanded.
The one thing I would like to see.
Tell me what you'd like to see.
I would like to see more with Steph with the ball in his hands as a pick and roll ball handler. He ran 23 pick and rolls last night. That's about average for him and way below average since KD went out. Only 7 with Draymond as the screener. Now, they ran 12 of those in the fourth quarter against Houston in Game 6 alone. Mm. And that to me, has the look of a sort of they're feeling out, okay, how is Marc Gasol going to guard us? Okay, so he's coming up to the level of screen, kind of trapping Steph. Okay, what does that leave open? And there were a couple times where Steph would get around Mark. And there were literally 4 guys on him.
Yeah.
4. The whole team was on him.
Yeah, and we saw that in the Milwaukee series. Toronto's great at building a wall.
Yeah.
They are great. And the wall can be in the paint for Giannis, or it can be up above the free throw line to make sure that Steph and Klay don't really get the type of separation that they want.
But I think they're going to look at film of that and say, okay, so now we know how they're going to guard us. Now, they may do some different stuff in game 2.
Yeah.
But we're confident that if we maybe isolate Steph and Draymond on one side of the floor, like there are things we can do where we can get going with the head of steam a little bit and get our half court playmakers going in a little more open space. I don't think we saw enough of that, but some of that again is going to be the Raptors are going to build a wall. Even then, even if you catch them off guard, they're going to build a wall and they're just going to have to make shots. But I do think we'll see more of Steph with the ball in his hand, the ball in his hands as a pick and roll distributor, partly because I just don't know what else they can do.
No, I agree. In looking, you know, at this game and kind of taking a step back, I want to say that game one, a lot of times is, you know, in football, when they say that the first like 10 plays will be scripted.
Yeah.
Right. Because you just want to see. Right. How they're going to guard your run, your play action, you script your first 10 just so you know what kind of their game plan is. Where in basketball, because you have 7 games, like game one, a lot of time, not saying that you're not trying to win. Game one is a feel out game. Let me see this. Let me do this. And look, Nick Nurse, when they were down 0-2 and everybody, like, including myself, had Milwaukee going to the finals because they had
the next great dynasty.
Yeah. They had the MVP and they were playing great. And then Nick Nurse made those adjustments. And obviously it still came down to Van Fleet hitting 6 threes in a game, Giannis airballing. It's still a lot of things had to fall their way. In this game one, it was like, okay, well, let's see how they're guarding Steph pick and rolls. Okay, we can do a little bit more of that. Steve Kerr is going to dance around to make sure. That's why a lot of times he never would start his, you know, killer lineup until a need win or a killer lineup in a game five or game six. Like, that's when he would do it. He didn't come out with that in the
except against Houston. Houston reached a point of respect level where he was like, we're just starting Draymond at center. Like, yeah. We're going right to it. Now, obviously, they don't have that lineup available to them right now with KD out, but still.
Yeah. So
to your point, usually he waits until, okay, it's back against the wall time.
Yeah. It was back against the wall or need win or we're not playing any more games. We're going to start this lineup and everybody needs to be ready to go. And so, in that mold and in that idea, like, I'm still confident that Steve Kerr has a few more tricks up his sleeve. But the number one trick he wants is probably to get Kevin Durant back. And I know we keep talking about this, but we're talking about the leading scorer on the best team, the last two finals MVPs, right?
Yeah, he's like, good.
Kevin's very good. So that's a storyline. If he doesn't come back, if Kevin Durant doesn't come back, I feel like this is a 50-50 series at best, leaning more towards Toronto because they have half court, even if we're talking about 51% leaning that way. But you never want to count out the champions. But we can see that there is going to be a little bit more difficult for them to sustain it without depth. Because you can say that they played like, oh, this is a 73 Warriors. Let me tell you guys, from an individual that played against a 73-win Warrior team, there was so much depth on that bench. You had Barbosa. You had Livingston. You had Harrison Barnes. You had so many guys that could kill you in
Barbosa
different ways.
And Livingston did kill you the first two games.
Yeah, and we had to change our lineup. We had to change our defensive scheme, because game one and game two, we did a great job of holding down Steph and Clay, and the rest of the guys murdered us. And so we had to tweak our defense and keep tweaking until we found what we were best at and what gave us our best chance. So don't tell me that they get to just play the 73 win like style with five guys. No, that 73 win style was with 10 guys. And that's something that I don't think enough people, you know, really, really understand.
And this is what you said before, where you alluded to this. In signing Kevin Durant, they made a decision. We're sacrificing all of our depth for another star. And it's a decision you make 10 times out of 10.
10 times out
of 10. For the reasons that have happened, which is when one of the stars gets hurt. Usually if you're if LeBron got hurt, you were out. It's over. If your best player, even if your second best player gets hurt, again, in the finals, it's over. You can't win.
Again, unless you have a guy like Bron.
The insurance, he couldn't win when Kyrie was hurt.
Agreed, but at least it was like you felt like there was still a chance, right?
And this was the number one reason they got KD. It was like, well, the best insurance for Steph turning an ankle is to just have a guy that's as good as Steph and have four stars on our team. This is the sacrifice. This is the sacrifice you make. It's like, well, your depth's a little shaky. Well, that's reality. That's just what it is. I'm going to make a prediction for you. Ready?
Tell me.
This is a very nerdy prediction. One of the first three plays of game two for the Warriors will be a screen the screener play for Steph. Steph pick and roll where they screen Gasol on his way up, so he's behind the play, and then the center comes up and screens for Steph. I don't think they did that once in the first game. That's usually one of their out of timeout staples, and that's a way, now that I've seen how Mark is guarding us, okay, now we have to screw with his rhythm a little bit. We have to hit him a little bit. I'm going to say, if one of the first three plays is that, and
I will be watching just with that on my
Can mind. I say something else that's
Please
starting
tell me, tell,
that's
tell me
irritating to me?
Yeah.
This is something that's irritating to me.
Did I do it?
No.
Okay.
It's not irritating to me. I just keep hearing and reading that Masai Ujiri's bold gambles are being paid off. This is Masai Ujiri threw his chips in rolled the dice. Threw his chips in, and it's paying off. Masai Ujiri is an incredible GM.
Great.
Siakam at 27. Underrated element of the Bucks series, by the way, that no one talked about was because Anunoby didn't play.
Yeah.
He traded Gravis Vasquez to the Bucks for the draft picks that became OG Anunoby and Norman Powell.
Yeah.
I mean,
So what's bothering you? Because you keep telling me about
Here's
this.
What's bothering
Tell me what's bothering you.
Trading DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a very likely low first round pick is for Kawhi Leonard is not a gamble. That's not a gamble. That's a trade that you make 100 times out of 100. You throw a party when it becomes available to you. DeMar DeRozan is a very good player. No disrespect for DeMar DeRozan. This is Kawhi Leonard. And so Jakob Poeltl, solid bench.
You can call him Jacob.
Jake Poeltl, as they called him on Game of Zones. Nice bench big. I like him. I think he's a smart player. I don't know if he's a starter in the NBA long term on a good team. You know, if you're getting Kawhi, that you're the pick you're trading, if he's healthy. And there was confidence that Kawhi was going to be healthy enough to play a lot of games this year. He was never not going to show up in Toronto. That was not a thing that was going to happen.
Thank you.
Like, that is a – and I'm not trying to say that it was like that Masai had an easy job there, because there's the institutional sort of value of DeMar DeRozan, and he's a beloved player and all of this. And as I said before, there are lots of other moves he made that are like genius moves.
Love Masai.
Getting Van Vliet and turning him into a player. But that Kawhi trade is not a gamble. That's a trade you make it. You're like, oh, that's a great trade.
Let's say this, and all the LeBron fans are all the people that hate me whenever I reference this. There's a couple of things here. This is not a great trade until they either win or Kawhi signs.
Disagree.
Let me say this.
Okay.
It's not that it wasn't a great trade. That's not it. I apologize. I misspoke. I don't think that we can judge how great it was until one of those two things happened. And because this is what you say, he made it further than they've ever made it. Yes. Congratulations. That is awesome.
Yes.
That is. But it's everything conditionally. Everything is conditional in this league, right? It's never black and white. If LeBron James, the guy that won 8 straight conferences, doesn't leave, we don't know if Kawhi Leonard is in the unit would be the same, right, if LeBron was in there. Yes, he's beat LeBron before, so you can use that argument. Secondly, if they lose in this finals and he leaves and goes to someplace else, and now you're looking at, well, you're basically starting over. You're going to start over.
Which they were fine with. And that's why the trade, as soon as it happens. See, I disagree with you. I don't care if he leaves. I don't care if that 4-bounce shot bounces out and they lose in overtime.
Okay.
It's a great trade from the moment they made it, because the downside is he walks and we rebuild, which, by the way, we're going to have to do anyway, because our team with DeMar and Kyle and everyone else is not good enough and is not going to be good enough, and we're sick of running into the brick wall every year. Even if the brick wall goes to LA, there's just going to be another brick wall. That team's not going to win. That team's not going to win the title. We've discovered that. It was a
great trade.
It was a risk. I'm going to say it was a risk-free trade.
Okay.
Which is the opposite of a gamble. To me, there was no gamble in that trade.
There was... I agree with you. You are convincing me. I just look at it from a perspective as like, okay, well, you make this trade. If he doesn't resign, you're going to be blowing up your team.
Which they knew.
But it's like, understand this. You had the best record. You were in a conference finals. They had a lot of success to say that we can't just keep tweaking, that we're just going to blow this up. That was my only thing that it's just like, wow, okay. So you're going to, that's fine. You're in the finals. You have a chance to win, and that's ultimately that's where I respect it. But then the flip side of it is like, if that ball doesn't bounce in and it's done and he leaves, you're now starting over, and we know this. Starting over for franchises could be 5 years. It could be 10 years. That's the only issue. You look at great franchises like, and again, Masai is a stud. I've known him since his Denver days.
Have you really?
Yeah, because Josh Kroenke, I've known Josh for a lot of years, so I spent a little bit of time up in Denver, so I've known Masai for years. If you look at this whole situation and you're like, dude, the Suns, if you look at what the Lakers, if there's a lot of quality organizations that had to rebuild, and that could take a lot of years, right? And so you're just risking like being a playoff team and being a very, very good team and a perennial playoff team. You're betting it all on one season. That's what you were doing. And that's why I think when people talk about a gamble, if Kawhi loses in the second round and he leaves, you have now decided that on 1 year, you were going to decide whether or not you were going to blow up your franchise, which could take anywhere from 5 to 10 years.
And I think they had already decided it. When they signed Lowry through 2020, DeRozan was around the same time, Ibaka through 2020, and all those guys are the ages that they are.
Yeah.
You have already made a decision. That's the expiration date of this team.
And that's
one way or another. Now, if Kawhi resigns, everything changes, because then everything. Kyle has to stay longer term. My guy Siakam, Siakam might get the max this summer in an extension. It's crazy how good he is.
He has to.
I mean, I'll tell you this. The starting point for his agent and the ending point for his agent is going to be the max. That's it.
Yes.
Like, either give me the max or we're going to free agency. That's it.
Yeah.
There are guys who will trade some money for security, right? Particularly when you haven't got the big contract before. So I shouldn't say max or nothing, but if I'm his agent,
I'm saying it's Max or nothing.
I'm saying Max, and call me back when you're ready to do that.
Okay, so is he a restricted guy this year?
He will be if he does not sign his extension. He'll be restricted after next year.
After next year. See, for Toronto, it's like, hey, you're going to be restricted next year. We'll see you next year. Well, you know what we want to see? We want to see you make an all-star game. We want to see you double up their performance. Because the only thing that could happen, because this is the thing about Max, the only thing that you can do from there is go down. Right. So let's say that he comes back next year, has a solid season. Let's say Kawhi returns, and let's say they have a solid season. Maybe he, I don't want to say devalues himself, but maybe that number is under the max. Right. Maybe teams look at him as a secondary, third option. Yeah. So his agent should be starting at max, but understand max is the starting point. And that means that you can go down from there. So if you have him for another year, you're not offending him by letting him hit for restricted free agency. That's your best bet to keep him for less than his value of the max. So I think that the Toronto Raptors are in a very, very good position to possibly get him for less than the max, because he's got to repeat this performance.
I want to say two other big picture things about this series. Number one, there's a lot of doom and gloom about the Warriors. And, you know, were they lucky to even just lose by 9? They need KD. I have so much respect for this core. They're going to come out like a house of fire in game 2. Yeah. They're going to play hard. They're going to play smart. I they're going to make all these little adjustments here or there. But, like, they are champions. Assume a 2-0 deficit at your peril.
Yeah, this generation, they are legends.
The second thing is, so all this stuff about whatever, this is Steph and Clay and Draymond, and even if that's all they got, even if they're going with the war with those dudes and Kevon Looney trying to get random lobs and Andre Iguodala on one leg, watch them go out and win game 2, because they can do it. The second thing is, you know, you can speak to this as a player. I thought the Raptors would have some semblance of, oh my God, this is the finals. Like, they just went out and played a basketball game. It was like, they played a normal, good Toronto Raptors game. You've been in the finals. They're obviously every player that makes the finals is there for the first time. Was it hard for you to ease into the first game, or do you just play?
Again, I was very, very fortunate, but my first time was my rookie year. So, I understood, and I went from the NCAA final where you're playing in a single elimination game in a national championship to my first year going straight to the NBA finals against the damn Lakers and the three-peat. So it was and then my next year was against San Antonio. So my finals experience is different, because that's really all I knew for three straight years.
Who did you have guarding Shaq in this series? Todd McCullough?
No one guarded Shaq. All of us.
That was when Shaq. Like, people who are younger,
you don't understand.
Like,
you don't
Shaq, understand. Before they really, allowed you to play illegal defense and zones and all this stuff, there was nothing you could do.
And this is what I want to say about when people talk about the Warriors and the 97 Bulls and all of this stuff. That, generationally, and the way the three-point line is and all this other stuff, that you can make a comparison. The issue when it comes to comparing them to, the 2000, the early 2000 Lakers, is people. I don't give a what you say about this small ball. Looney was not guarding Shaq. Draymond was not guarding Shaq. So, you can say, Draymond in the pick and roll, and they would have shot threes. Shaq was getting everyone in foul trouble. Andrew Bogut was going to have to play a ton of minutes, right? You were going to, Boogie Cousins, and none of those guys wanted any of 0-1 Shaq.
The 0-1 Shaq there was just nothing you could do. Nothing. He was going to put the ball in the basket.
Yes, or you end the ball in the basket. And it was happened a lot of times.
And in those final series when he was geared up and in peak shape and just wanted to kill you, Todd McCullough.
No one.
There was just nothing.
Dikembe Mutombo.
What did you guys try to do? I don't even remember. Just run four guys at him?
We did a lot of chapel sessions, and I never forget. I remember I smacked Shaq's arm one time. If they called a foul every time you really fouled Shaq, he would have shot even more free throws. And I never forget, I tried to come over weak side and just try and get the ball. And all I remember is watch out, young fella. You do that shit again, I'm going to break your wrist. Right? Cause he was basically saying, if I was going to try and block the ball, he was going to put the ball, my wrist, and that rim together. And it was just.
You probably believed it too. He might break my wrist.
No, he really would. I kid you not. I would never doubt this Warriors team and what they've accomplished and what they still have to accomplish. I will say this, the Toronto Raptors, it was great that they had home court.
Yeah.
It was huge.
They've been home for a long time now,
too. Huge, right? And that's the other part. When they're talking about the rest for them, well, the Warriors had 9 days and this and that and all. Yes, but at least Toronto got to go home and stay at home, right? So that is actually a bonus, right? Those 9 days that the Warriors got, there was travel involved. You're in the road. You're doing a lot of different things. Toronto was just at home, kind of not waiting, but they were in their comfort zone. And that's the way the role players needed to be.
And maybe I shouldn't be sitting here giving Toronto such praise for playing a poised finals game, because Danny Green's been in the finals. Kawhi's a finals MVP. Marc Gasol, first time, but he's a veteran. Kyle Lowry, first time, but he's a veteran. Pascal is clearly just fearless, doesn't know any better. But still, it's the finals and the Warriors. And they just came out like, we're just good,
no,
man.
No, no, no. But this is the thing. And we said it, we just left the set of Get Up. We said this. How many of those guys on Toronto have played against Golden State before in the playoffs?
It matters.
Marc Gasol has played against them. Serge Ibaka has played against them. Danny Green has played against them. And Kawhi Leonard has. So your four of your veteran guys have played against the Warriors. Mind you, they might not have beaten the Warriors. But you know what they've done? They understand the game plan. They understand the intensity of the moment. They understand what Klay and Steph can do. One of the hardest things for us when we were in Cleveland was that you only got to see these guys twice a year and you might not see them 100%. So you might play them in January and not get these Golden State Warriors again until June. That's a big gap to be playing against one of the great
and
teams
in January.
In
you don't know what you're getting. You know, someone misses a game, this and that, you know.
And that was the thing. Remember when, Serge Ibaka and them were up 3-1, right? So he's played against the Golden State Warriors 15 times in the last, like, three seasons, right? Or whatever it is. So they've played a lot of games. And so not saying that it gives you a little bit advantage is not right, but it helps with your preparation. And when the coach is saying, hey, we need to make sure you're up on the screen, you know what up on a screen means against the Golden State Warriors versus against, playing against Milwaukee. When a coach says up on the screen versus Milwaukee is far different than saying up on the screen versus Golden State, and having that experience that a lot of those guys have, I think benefited them, and playing at home just added to that little boost.
Yeah, Danny Green was not a throw-in for Toronto.
No.
But I wonder if they even thought about the value of the extra value, and I tweeted this before the series, of like, they're not just acquiring Danny Green, they're acquiring the chemistry that Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard have together as teammates. And I just because I wanted to remind myself what it looked like, I went back and watched some footage of Warriors Spurs games from like 16 and 17. Yeah. And you see, like, when you watch that and you watch them defend the motion offense, like, it jumps out at you right away. Like, you just need to watch it for 5 minutes. Oh, Kawhi and Danny Green have done this a lot.
A lot.
A lot. They've been in the position where Kawhi's chasing Klay around a Steph pick, and they're talking and they're switching. And by the way, you rewatch those games, Kawhi is pointing and yelling and talking. Like, we think of him as a robot. Against the Warriors, he and Danny Green are talking to each other. And, like, that has to matter. It has to matter.
I'm telling you this from experience. It does matter. It 100% does matter being in the trenches with somebody. And I'll say this. It most likely helped because Danny Green had been there since his rookie year. Had been with Kawhi since Kawhi's rookie year. So even the transition of helping Kawhi feel at home there in Toronto, right? Having somebody there that has known you since you came into the NBA, another veteran guy, could help him and communicating, because he showed up in a somewhat hostile environment. Yes, everybody was excited, but you just got rid of the most popular guy probably since Vince Carter or Chris Bosh in Toronto. So you have this guy there that's committed to the city and wants to win a championship. You leave and all of a sudden you walk there and Kyle Lowry probably wasn't very happy, but at least at least he had Danny Green, a guy that had known him since his rookie year, someone that you can kind of associate with and someone that you had been in battles with. Let's not underestimate the value in that.
No, that's a great point. And because Kyle wasn't happy, and Danny Green is a really kind of gregarious, friendly personality, all of that. Well, you got to go. We got to go on to other things. But this is going to be an awesome game, too, because it seems like Toronto has a firm grip on the series, because that's how it always seems after one game. Everyone wants to just obsess over the one game. The Warriors are champions. They're in a position that they have not been in ever together, down 1-0 in the finals on the road. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere. Obviously, I think we're both going to be there. It's going to be absolutely crazy. And I just can't wait to see how both teams come out in a situation where, you know, neither of them has really been in up 1-0, down 1-0 in the finals. It's going to be an awesome game.
No, it's going to be amazing. And I love to see the Warriors answer because they normally do.
They always answer.
They normally do. And you know what? I know that they know in the back of their heads, there's a lot of different storylines, not their greatness, but their first championship, you know, with no Kyrie and no Kevin Love and a lot of injuries, whether it was Chris Paul.
It's starting to sound like Doc Rivers.
No, but I'm just saying that this is the truth. Like they have had a lot of injury things that have helped them. They probably would have won regardless. But now they're on the other side of that. And I think that's why they were so excited to beat Houston in that semis is because they were like, oh, we had an injury and we still came out with a victory. What's your excuse now? Well, here we are at the highest level and they are playing against a completely healthy, you know, albeit, you know, maybe wobbled Kawhi, but they're playing against a very healthy team that is a very good defensive team and very locked in. And they are hobbled and I still wouldn't really bet against them.
It's going to be an awesome game. RJ, thank you. It's always good to see you. And I'll see you up in the Great White North in like 48 hours or something.
All right. Can't wait.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.